Are you ready for new dimensions and countless possibilities today and for the future? It's an exciting new time, and the answers are out there. So join Mary Jane Popp as she explores the unique and unusual for a better life on Pop Talk in search of the truth. And here she is, Mary Jane Popp.
And welcome to Pop Talk. Got a good one this hour, I'm telling you. A little bit later on, people ask you, do you have your soulmate in your life? Well, what does a soulmate really mean? And how would you like to go from role mate to soulmate? That's a little bit later, but before we do that, how many of you believe in psychics and psychic intuition? Well, maybe, just maybe, the psychic detective can really fill us in on what that all means or doesn't mean. So let me ask you, can you tap into your soul's guidance to transform your life? What about psychics and their intuition? Well, psychic badge-carrying detective Nancy Orland Weber says, you can access your own wisdom, and you can unlock your life's purpose and navigate challenges with clarity and confidence. Now, Nancy is an expert in animal communication, psychic investigations, and spiritual development, along with authoring several books, including The Life of a Psychic Detective. Nice to have you with us, Nancy.
Oh, Mary Jane, thank you for inviting me, and it's a pleasure to be here with you, and hopefully we can help a lot of people open up.
You betcha. More. You betcha. Yep. Now, let me ask you, do you believe in psychics?
I believe everybody is.
Oh, okay. Why?
Because everybody has a soul.
Okay.
The funny part is, psychic is really in the container called our human form, but we are souls, and souls can reach and connect to everything in all life. I believe that strongly, and I think some of us notice and some don't because we're very busy in life.
Okay, I tend to agree with you. I think everybody has intuition. I think everybody has some psychic abilities, but just like anything, you know, the good Lord created everybody with some abilities in one person, maybe more than another. So do you believe that some people just have more psychic abilities because it's innate? They're born that way?
Some are. Some are not. Some are at a time in life where they no longer so focused on getting things done on Earth, but more about their soul. And I heard you mention about soulmates. And so when people are really looking for connection, I believe then we start paying more attention to that, all the soul connections we can possibly have. And many call that psychic. But, you know, the Greek word was, meaning the soul, the essence, was called P-S-Y-C-H-E. And in English, it translated to psychic.
Oh.
But that just means soul. And so, yes, some of us, like a pianist who can, and Mozart can, you know, create at age seven.
Yeah,
sure. And some of us won't do it. I've been teaching psychic development since 1975, and I know that some people always have had it, but they're so busy in life, they couldn't focus on it. And others, when they're in their 30s, 40s, 20s, 60s, 80s, doesn't really matter. They suddenly decide, this is interesting. I need more to know about it.
Hmm.
And you mentioned spiritual purpose, you know, your soul's purpose.
Yeah.
It's all the same. It is when you feel like finding out your soul purpose, you pay more attention inside than outside. You tune into what you're picking up. You keep saying intuition, but a lot of people don't take that as work.
Yeah. So, do you believe in mediums, people that can speak to people on the other side or communicate with people on the other side?
As a psychic detective, I spoke to the crime victims who were murdered. And I have spoken to the missing who are found no longer on Earth, other than their body.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always believed that if you claim to be capable of those things, then you believe in everything being connected, and it's not only the physical, it's the soul. So why wouldn't we connect with souls on the other side? It just never didn't make sense to me that you can connect to anything.
Gotcha.
There's a funny story of a woman calling because she worked for a veterinarian. She said, I'm a communicator with dogs, but my horse is sick. I'm calling you. And I said, why don't you talk with your horse?
Uh-huh.
She said, because I can only talk with dogs.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
I said, if you know English and dog language, then you can communicate horse language or any other.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand why she limited it.
Huh. Do you think she limited it because she wanted to limit it?
She didn't know she could do more.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So how many of us, I may have always been psychic. I was born psychic. I remembered my birth. I remembered prior to my birth.
Hmm.
Weird. I knew songs from the 1930s. I wasn't born until 44. And I heard them, and I could sing them by the time I was two. I knew the words. And I remember being asked how. So I think, yeah, some of us pay attention to that part of it. Maybe because we don't want to be in the grounded world as much.
Gotcha.
Who knows? You know?
Do you believe there are guides on the other side that kind of watch over us?
I would say there are teachers here and teachers there.
Okay.
And a very wise woman, a wonderful mentor, who brought most of the mediumship to our country from the UK back in the 60s and 70s, said that it's your presence, it's your brain, it's your body, it's your mind. What do you let in? So if you let them in, then make sure that they are positive and from the light. So sure. People on the other side may be more objective. They may know us deeper and pay more attention and wisdom. And I am skirting the issue because I had a guide from the time I was in a crib.
Really?
What
is a guide? What is a guide? Is a guide an angel or an entity? Or what is a guide?
I don't know. I argue with all of that.
Oh, okay.
I don't accept just because it happens that it's not my mind doing some things. I want proof. And I need evidence. So I can remember having a discussion and looking back at all the proofs I had that the thing I saw as outside of me, big male figure, when I didn't know something, he would tell me what it was, as if he knew my mind, what I was looking at, what I was thinking, and he would interpret it in language for a child that would know.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
But as an adult, when I met him again in my 30s, when I opened up at age 31 to looking at all of it, he was there again, and I said, you're a figment of my imagination? And he said, if anything, you are a figment of mine. I went, wait a minute, I'm arguing with myself.
Yeah.
He said, no, you're not. You're arguing with something else. I'm from the, I am from the other part. So I have this part of me that doesn't just take it as gospel, whether it's an angel. I mean, I've had those things happen a lot and make their claim. But there's a part of me that goes, okay, I'm from the Western Hemisphere. Would I be thinking of not angels if I was in a rice paddy in China? Mm. Would I be thinking of Buddha and Buddha sattvas, et cetera? So I don't know.
Huh.
I don't really have answers. I have questions more than I have answers. And yet, because I know there are no absolutes, I still take them as, yes, we have guides, we have all kinds. But I don't have a guide particularly other than that one who came and said, when I was 31, I will be with you for 3 years, and then you're on your own, direct knowledge. You go straight up. Hmm. I said, okay, teach me.
Okay. But now, do you believe... I remember, you know, little girl, you know, in parochial school, and the nuns would always tell us we have guardian angels that stay with us all our lives. Do you believe in guardian angels?
I believe each, there's no one thing. So for some, yes, guardian angels exist for them to be utilized. It's perfect for that person. Another one, you know, for myself, I have a different path. Where I was told, you're on your own, and I did have a vision of some presence that lit up the whole room three times, and each time there was somebody, friends present, lots of people who saw, but didn't hear. Mm. And I was told I would be on my own. So for me, I don't have guardian angels that I know of. I don't have those, but yes, people have all kinds. I had a funny experience with one where I was looking for help and I lay down and I meditated and I prayed and all of a sudden this face came and he goes, my name is Michael. And I said, Michael? He said, Michael. Okay. And he said, here is the information you need about the situation. Gave me date, time, place, everything about something that mattered deeply to a bunch of our children, a whole group community. And I went and I dealt with it. I wrote it all down and I came and it was true. And I looked and I went, Michael? Isn't that an archangel or something?
Yeah, Michael. Yeah, he's an archangel.
And he said, yes, I am. And that was it. So do I know if it's real or not? No, but the proof was that the information was so accurate. I mean, detailed that nobody else knew. There was a record of it somewhere, and the only people who knew it were two people and me. And I came to the two because they were in trouble, and I told them everything, and I was right. And that freed up something tremendously for them. Now, do I understand that? I don't. I honestly, you had a very different bringing up than I did, which means that I'm coming from it from a very different angle of questioning everything. My favorite bumper sticker was question authority.
Yeah, I think that the bumper sticker should just be question, period. Yeah. You know, that's it. Now, I've talked to a lot of people who've had near-death experiences. To me, it was a death experience because they died. I mean, some people I've talked to, and including Dr. Eben Alexander, I don't know if you know him, the proof of heaven. And he is a neurosurgeon, and he used to laugh at his patients because they would say, you know, I had this experience, you know, and yeah, I died and all this. And he used to laugh at him. Because he said, oh, it's just your brain, you know, the electricity is firing or something like that, until it happened to him. And now he is a true believer that there is something after when we're ready for it. Some people have the near-death experience and they're told, nope, not your time yet, go back. Do you know anybody that's had a near-death experience? I've talked to a lot of them.
Me. I was given 8 hours to live, and when they said that, I had an anaphylactic reaction to the IV that they gave me. I was in the hospital. Thank God three doctors were there. They brought me back within minutes. But all I can remember at all was I had peace. I didn't hear anything say go back or stay. I just had peace.
Peace, yeah.
Light and peace. I felt great. And when I came back, I walked off a deathbed.
Huh. Yep. A lot of people say, darn, I didn't want to come back. It was good. Well, you know, it was a good feeling.
Well, I had a two-week-old infant.
Oh,
it was doctors who made a terrible mistake when I gave birth. And so that's why I was dying. And so I had a baby to protect also.
Sure.
And to care for. And I think that was why I always say I thank her for my life.
Mm. Absolutely.
I was 25. So
you've worked with people for different mysteries.
Yes.
Can you give me an example or two? Because I haven't seen your book, so I'm fascinated with the whole idea.
Okay, sure. One of the very first that I actually worked with, I had moved to a place in New Jersey where, small town, and they had a karate school, and I signed up my four-year-old with a teacher who happened to be the first female police officer in that town, but I didn't know it. Anyhow, she had read some article about my work with animals, and at the end of a session, she took me aside and said, "You have to work with the police?" I said, "Why?" Because I hadn't, but I don't answer right away. That's me. I want to know why, like you. I question. And she said, "Well, we had a rape," and she didn't finish her sentence. I had a picture in my head, told her who I saw, described it, and she said, "Would you mind telling my superior officer?" "Oh, that's fine." Thought nothing of it. The next week, he was there, and he asked me to repeat it. I did. He said, "Can I come over tomorrow with my partner?" So he was a detective in that town.
Okay.
So they both came over, and they sat opposite me in my office, probably about 6 feet from them, 5 feet, something. And they said, "Can you please go over it?" And so I did, and then they looked at me and said, "We have a problem with your description." I said, "What's the problem?" Now, I wasn't trying to tune in or be psychic or anything. I'm just curious at that point. Mm-hmm. And they said, "Well, we have two men answering that description," which really got me upset. I stood up, and I limped across the room very decidedly, sat back down. They said, "How did you know one of them had a limp?" I said, "Because he's the murderer. He didn't just rape her. He murdered her. And I became him, so you can know."
Oh.
And I had no clue why I said it, because I wasn't thinking. I just was doing.
Yeah.
And so they went back. They called me later. They took that guy with the limp, and they said, "We have an eyewitness."
Oh, my gosh.
I said, "An eyewitness?" He said, "Yeah, you know, you're a psychic guy." I said, "Okay." And he fully confessed.
Oh,
that was the first murder case I worked on as a psychic. I've worked on others, not as a psychic.
Huh. Now, when you communicate with animals, obviously they don't talk to you, do they? Is it just like mind to mind, not necessarily talking to talking?
Either way, it's soul to soul. So my first step for those listening who love wildlife and pets and everything else, birds in the sky, trees, the first step I ever make is, it's not a tree. I get rid of the noun. It's not a cat. It's not a dog. It's a soul in a container that's different than mine. That's it. Just like you're in a soul container that's different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
So I get rid of the paw and the fur and the feathers and the scales and all the rest. They're not. And when I can feel that way, I want to know, soul to soul, I want them to know how much I love them as a soul. Don't have to like you. Don't have to like your action. But I can love you. And so I go through that process first before I do anything else. It may take seconds, minutes, half hour, doesn't matter. And when I do that, I wait for the joy in my heart to bring tears to my eyes, and I'm done and I'm fine. And so I've worked with crazy stallions. I've worked with missing dogs that way. I'm missing Poppy, little boy. And the funny part with missing, I want people to know, it's no different than missing a runaway, whether it's a child who you know actually runs away, not abducted. But the first step I always do is love them and connect to them as soul to soul, and appreciate who they are, and they're entitled to their own feelings. Mm. So I then believe, and I hold a strong belief, that our brains are a natural translator, just like theirs are, their soul, their heart, everything. We all have natural connections at a very deep level, and a lot of times our conscious mind argues the point. I don't know how to speak another language. I don't, you know, consciously, we have too much limitation. But we really don't have limitations if we believe, whether it's religious, non-religious, it's the belief that says we are all part of this universe. We are all connected.
Wow.
And magic at that point. I feel like I am with my best friend. So a missing puppy, a missing dog. What I discovered, though, made it absolutely real to me.
Do they know they're communicating with you?
Well, two of them. One was a missing puppy, Adobe. It's in my book, Nature Speaks, and that's different. It's a long story, but they called me frantic, yada, yada, and I said, he'll show up at 10 a.m. at the barn. You have a barn? Yeah, we do. Oh, good, because it's a barn. Right? I'm on the phone with them. I have no clue. She's screaming. And so we spoke. She came over. I gave them details, and they went and said, well, every area you said didn't exist until they questioned the land and found that I was looking at the land before it was rebuilt. I saw a golf course that was buried, pipes, drains, that kind of thing. So anyhow, the puppy shows up at 10 a.m. by the barn the day I tell them it will show up 7 days later. All scrawny and scared. I don't meet the puppy. 2.5 years later, I'm giving a talk for a kennel, AKC, for Dobies. And about 300 people in the back, and I'm finished. And a couple stands up and said, you remember us? I said, of course, you had the puppy who was missing. Yeah. Okay. Would you like to meet the dog? I said, of course. The dog comes in, walks slowly all around, looks at everything, and then sees me and makes a dart for me, jumps into my lap. I'm on the floor, puts his head on my shoulder, and goes to sleep. That's called submission to the mother. We had never met before in physical world, but we certainly met before soul to soul.
So
that to me is what I mean by proof.
I see. No, I understand. I have two dogs, obviously. I love dogs. I've got two Samoyeds. And how, if I called you and talked to you, how would you talk to them? You do it
same way.
Yeah?
Same way. I would talk, first of all, I treat everything like a friend. Doesn't matter how long I know you or don't know you. You are my friend because I believe we're all souls here on a journey, no matter who. So a lot of times, like I have a friend, Marissa, who has an adorable dog, Ginger. But I didn't know Ginger, and I was on a Zoom. She was coming to one of my classes. Every time she's on it with me, she said Ginger never does that. Jumps into her lap and starts kissing her head and looking at me. And that, to me, is common. Not always, but I love all life. I love cats and dogs. I've had many. I was a rescue agent. I adopted everything.
That's amazing.
Right. And well, my kids all adopt everything too now.
Yeah. Oh,
so it runs in the family.
So,
and I found that they all treat me like a friend. I treat them like a friend.
So at this point, I mean, you can't tell me something about my dogs, can you?
Not necessarily, because I like to take my time tuning in.
Oh, okay.
I see one much more playful than the other, though.
Yeah. Well, one's a little younger.
Yeah, much more playful. Like a puppy would be closer to it, but not puppy.
Yeah.
But that's all I get right away. But then I like to get to know them. It's kind of like psychic readings and people doing shows or whatever, 15-minute read. I don't like doing that at all.
Yeah.
I like in-depth. I like to know you.
Sure. So can we build some, now, we already talked that everybody has intuition. Everybody has psychic abilities. Mm-hmm. Some have more so because it's just innate. But we can all develop it. Can we all develop talking to animals?
Absolutely. Without a single doubt. You have to. It's no different than talking with somebody who speaks a different language than you, yet you can get the feel.
Oh, okay.
Like music is the universal language. right?
Yeah.
We don't have to know all of it. I mean, I listen to music, all kinds of genres. And there's a feel. So we always start with that. And you ask, do you have two Samoy? So are they your buddies?
Oh, yeah. Right? Very much so.
And do you know when they want something?
Yeah, pretty much. I can kind of tell. It's the look on their face. You know, they always say, oh, animals don't have, you know, facial. Yes, they do.
Sure they do.
Yeah.
Right. But still, I would say that's because you care about them, so you're paying attention. And that's key to animal communication between humans and all other life forms. If we don't care to, and we don't have a motivation to empathize, to comprehend at all, to seek out what they're attempting to tell us, we have to start somewhere,
yeah,
right?
That's true. That's true.
And so I bet you know a lot more about their moods and what's going on and when they're hungry. These things I think we take for granted, and yet they are the beginning, at least, of the proof that you could do a lot more about animal communication than you realize. God. It's like, how does the animal behaviorist find out that a dog can know so many commands?
Yeah, that's
right?
True. Yeah, absolutely.
But there has to be that signal that passes between them where that dog, like Hudson and Rex, that the series now, Rex is three actual German Shepherds who are trained, but they take commands very easily because they love doing what they do.
Yeah.
But it takes somebody who understands each one of them to help them bring out their own abilities and to have a good time.
Gotcha.
So,
you know what? Unfortunately, we're running short of time. I got to have to have you come back again. Do you have a website?
Yes, I do. It's my name.
Oh, so Nancy Orland Weber or just Nancy?
Correct.
Okay, so it's Nancy Orland, O-R-L-E-N Weber, W-E-B-E-R.com?
Yes, that's all it is.
Terrific. Well, Nancy, I hope you'll come back and visit with us again.
Thank you so much, Mary Jane. It's been a delight, and I wish you all the best with your two beloved gorgeous.
Yeah, my babies. My babies.
Yes. Aw, fur baby.
Thank you. You betcha. Take care, sweetheart, and thank you so much
thank
for being
you.
With us.
Thank you, Mary Jane.
Once again, that's Nancy Orland Weber. Name of the book, The Life of a Psychic Detective. And then you can also check out her other books. Coming up, Rollmate to Soulmate. What does that mean?
Only 1 in 5 people with disabilities, including those with autism, are employed, despite many having the skill set and desire to work.
Maybe it's because employers don't know what kind of jobs they can do.
Okay, try me.
What about a programmer?
That is a job for someone with autism.
What about a teacher?
That is a job for someone with autism.
Oh, how about a healthcare worker?
Yes, those are all jobs for someone with autism. The truth is, qualified people with autism can do a lot of different jobs, but often get overlooked due to outdated stigmas and beliefs. Businesses value diversity, but sometimes don't recognize the unique strengths and abilities of the autism community. Introducing WIN, the Workplace Inclusion Now program by Autism Speaks. We help businesses lead the way in inclusive hiring.
Ooh, what about a ranch hand?
Yeah!
Sure, that's a job for someone with autism too. To learn more, go to autismspeaks.org/win. That's autismspeaks.org/win.
It's hot to the max in the summer, and your air conditioner gives up the ghost. Who are you going to call? ACP Mechanical, that's who. I did, and I can't believe what a great job they did in my home. It's cool and comfortable with a job well done. Hi, Mary Jane Pop here. Whether it's cooling or heating, Enrique and his ACP Mechanical team can install, repair, commercial or residential, no matter what HVAC system you have or want, and they've done it for over 20 years. Air conditioners, heat pumps, furnaces, thermostats, all quality and affordable solutions, and they're bonded and insured. I know you'll love their work. I do. Call ACP Mechanical, 916-704-8556. That's 916-704-8556 for all your comfort needs. That's ACP Mechanical, 916-704-8556, and expect an expert job well done and right the first time. You know, we count on that feeling of love. You know, you fall in love. What a great feeling that is. But does it last? And if not, how do we make it last? Well, enter Dr. Warren Farrell, internationally recognized expert on couples communication, and he's also a New York Times bestselling author. So now comes his latest book, Roommate to Soulmate, The 7 Secrets of Lifelong Love. So hang on to your heart and keep that spark alive. Dr. Farrell, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Oh, I can't be with you. I'm just dancing to that music. It's too much fun.
Well, it is. I mean, we expect love to be there, you know. But first of all, before we do anything, define for me, what is soulmate? I mean, I've had people tell me that my husband and I, he's passed now, but he said, they always say, yeah, that's your soulmate. You guys are soulmates. What does that mean?
It means usually it comes as a result of somebody that you really feel you can share your heart with, and maybe share that they can share something about you that they feel they'd like to have changed, which is normally perceived as a criticism, and you respond without becoming defensive. And as a result of that, you don't both feel like you're walking on eggshells, and you don't feel you have to go out and badmouth him to women friends, and he doesn't feel he has to go out and drink or, you know, do something for the church to make himself feel appreciated. Hmm. And so you both feel like you have that connection with each other.
Yeah, I think we did. We were actually, we used to laugh because when he passed, we were married almost 53 years.
Wow, wonderful.
And I used to say, married 53 years, messing around for 57, because I knew him 4 years before that. But is communication the key?
Communication is the key.
Yeah?
And communication has many aspects to it. So one of the ways of filling your reservoir of love is to appreciate each other. But most people do that when they're first falling in love and they're first getting to know each other. They see differences that, you know, things they like about the other person, and they tell them. But after a while, complacency sets in. And so one of the things I teach people in my workshop to do is, well, actually two things. One is to appreciate each other at least once every week to set aside a time. You can do it spontaneously during the week anytime you want, of course, but to set aside a specific time, because we normally just take the things we like about the other person for granted, and we don't discipline ourselves to really think about what did you do recently that I really appreciated, and sharing that with their partner. And then the second part of appreciation is doing it at multiple levels of specificity. So instead of, you know, last night I made some halibut, and, you know, Liz shared that she really liked the way that I sealed the halibut on the outside, and that it was moist, a little bit too moist, she thought, inside. But as we, you know, let it sit outside for a while, it got a little bit less moist, and it was just perfect. Mm-hmm. And that the spicing was really good on it, and that type of thing. And so that allowed me to feel like she didn't just say, "Oh, good meal," but to feel appreciated for the specifics of that.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's one of those things when I look back, obviously after a lot of years, it's the little things. It's not the big things that happen. I mean, Rick has been with me all along, and all the things that I've done on radio and television and, you know, writing and a book and all that kind of thing. But it's more than that. You know what really came to me after he passed, especially, and that I miss more than anything else? Wherever we went, if we went grocery shopping or we stopped at a store or we were going to the gym to work out, he always held my hand.
Oh, how wonderful.
And
nice.
And I miss. That I miss,
yes,
probably more than anything else, because that was our automatic connection all the time.
Mm-hmm.
People used to tease us. Oh, we love seeing you guys because you're always holding hands. Well,
yeah.
It was nothing. It didn't mean, like, really? That it impressed you? It doesn't impress us. That's natural. You know, that's
yes.
what we do.
And I see that in my role mate and soulmate workshops. Although I teach all these skill sets, like this, you know, how to actually go about in real life, handling the personal criticism without becoming defensive. What often comes up in the evaluations where people just tell my wife Liz and I is like it's you know part of what convinces us that this is going to be such a good experience is that we see the vibe between the two of you,
mm-hmm.
And just lots of little ways you look at each other, touch each other, and so on. When you think nobody's looking, that's also what tells us that something is really good here.
Yeah. I always used to laugh because I always had a temper. I got that from my dad. I came by it legitimately.
Is that an Irish background?
No, it's Romanian. Romanian.
Okay.
But it's that you know, kind of feeling that, I just blow up. He was exactly the opposite. I mean, if opposites attract, we were opposites. And he would be the rock. And he'd wait until I just cooled down. I said I used to go up one side of the wall, across the ceiling, and back down the other side. And then I'd come back down, and I'd go, he's not arguing with me. If you don't argue with, I can't argue with myself, you know. So, and that would calm me down. And then he said, can we now sit down, and we'll talk about it. And it was like, yeah, that's a good idea. But he understood me so well.
Yes.
And I did understand him very well, too. But we never, I know you won't believe this. I mean, we had discussions. We had some disagreements. We never argued. Never.
Whoa.
Never wow. argued. You know, I call them discussions because, yeah, we would, no two people in this whole world will totally agree on everything forever. It's just not going to be that way.
That is for sure.
But never a major argument. Just wasn't that way. Because he knew how I would react to things. I knew how he would react to things. And somehow we gelled, you know?
Yes, yes.
So that,
oh, yes.
Yeah, that was special.
Most couples, many couples do one of the things that you did, which is kind of get attracted to an opposite personality. And oftentimes they become critical of the very things that they're attracted to. The, you know, the person who's more spiritual or New Age or yoga oriented.
Really?
Becomes attracted to somebody that's a financial rock and very stable, and vice versa. But then they start complaining about the other one. You know, the person who's spiritual says, you know, why don't you ever come to a yoga workshop? Why don't you ever, you know, sort of spend time just, sort of walking out in the woods with me and just enjoying the day?
Mm-hmm.
And the financial rock says, well, you know, the home that you liked so much, the amount of money that you do doing the fulfilling work. Fulfilling work doesn't pay very much, and so I have to, you know, I have to keep focusing on my financial, you know, getting my act together financially,
yeah.
And that doesn't give me the time to do all these things that are so fulfilling to you.
Huh. So how do you get around that?
First of all, you hear each other out and realize, well, you know, all right, how much do, you know, if I want this, say, the financial person to keep focusing on the money because I really like the home that we live in and I don't make enough money to do that, you know, to be able to even come close to supporting that myself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me just absorb that, you know, that I'm, you know, that I'm asking for things that require this. On the other hand, you know, and then there's, so you hear what the other one, what attracted you to this opposite person to begin with, and then instead of blaming her or him, you look in the mirror and say, okay, you know, let's work out something that can be good for both of us. Let's move into a less expensive home, or let's you put more money into less fulfilling work that pays more, or just stop enabling each other to be what you're complaining about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a relationship, I always say there's a certain amount of compromise. And compromise means nobody is totally happy. You know, it's just,
yeah.
you have to give a little to get a little, right?
Indeed. That's very true. one of the seven, as you probably know, that the Role Mate to Soulmate book's subtitle is The Seven Secrets to Lifelong Love, and one of those secrets is how to create win-win solutions to your stickiest problems.
Amazing. Yeah, let's go through some of those, because I haven't seen your book.
I didn't get your book.
That's okay. Hey, I'm a nosy person, so I got a lot of questions. let's kind of go through some of those seven, kind of the abbreviated version, and then they can get the rest when they get your book.
Sure. The most important single one is the ability, the problem that haunts almost every couple is the inability to handle personal criticism without becoming defensive. And when I originally started teaching the Role Mate to Soulmate workshop, I would advise people to not do that. But then I would invite all the people in the workshop to come back about 6 months and a year later and share with me what worked and what didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And what didn't work was they would say, well, you know, the wisdom in the workshop of not being defensive in response to criticism, we all agreed with that. But in reality, the moment the criticism appeared, the wisdom disappeared.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, it's tough.
And so I started to really work on whether or not I could change that. And I realized, historically speaking and biologically speaking, when we heard criticism, it was a potential enemy.
Yeah.
And therefore, getting up our defenses was natural and functional for survival. It's just dysfunctional for love.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw that no other person who did couples workshops, they all had this problem. They couldn't overcome it. And so I decided to tackle it. And long story short, over the period of 30 years, what worked the best was couples creating a caring and sharing practice, what I came to call a caring and sharing practice. And before they, and that's just 2 hours a week, and the beginning of that practice is just learning how to appreciate each other at multiple levels of specificity at the beginning and at the end of the caring and sharing practice.
Hmm.
But then the crux comes.
Hmm.
The couple sits down together, and the person about to hear a criticism or concern expressed by their partner meditates, so they alter their natural biological state of defensiveness, and they meditate using six mindsets that we found work most effectively. So, for example, one mindset is the love guarantee. And so the person about to hear the criticism says, if I provide a safe environment for you to say whatever you want, even if I completely disagree with it, even if it's in a tone of voice that I feel offensive, the more I disagree and the more offensive it is that you say it, the more, if I provide a safe environment, nevertheless, you'll feel so much more like you don't have to walk on eggshells. You'll feel so much more secure with me, and you'll feel, therefore, more love from me, and therefore you'll love me more.
Huh.
So what we're doing there is switching the entire we're doing an evolutionary shift in the biologically natural reaction to criticism. And instead of associating it with being defeated, we're associating it with an opportunity to be more deeply loved. Now, that's just one of six mindsets, and each mindset goes deeper and deeper into creating those ways of being able to hear your partner's concerns and criticism.
Got it.
And when couples have experienced that, even just once, it's like, you know, women just and men both say, I just never thought, you know, women often say, you know, I was complaining to my women friends, so I didn't have to, you know, do it around my husband because I knew he'd never listen, or he'd argue back. And the men would say, I feel like I'm going to have to drink about, you know, 80% less now because,
yeah.
you know, I'm actually feeling
that's
hurt.
A good thing.
That's a very good thing, yes.
Okay, now we got one, ability to accept the criticism. Now, let's just kind of brief, because we don't have a whole lot of time here. I want to just briefly go through the other five. And then, like I said, they'd have to get the book so they can get the whole story. Okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
The other is, once they know how to do this, hearing their partner's criticism, I ask, that takes 2 hours a week. So what do you do with the other 166 hours? And so the other 166 hours, I teach them how to create a conflict-free zone to prevent spontaneous criticisms from escalating into conflicts during the week.
Mm.
And so they have the choice. They can either respond now to the criticism and argue back, and the chances are about 90% that they'll both end up being hurt, or they can wait this caring and sharing practice and both end up feeling heard.
Hmm. Interesting.
The next is filling the reservoir of love with appreciation. And so I ask people to do two things with that. One is to do it consistently, like usually once a week, and then also at multiple levels of specificity, like I was mentioning to you before. A fourth one is knowing how to transform the four depleters of love. That's criticisms, complaining, complacency, and controlling, the four C's, into four ways to deepen love.
Oh, that's good. That's good. That's a good one. I think that makes a whole lot of sense. Okay.
And then another one of the seven secrets is to master the 11 soulmate wisdoms. And one of those wisdoms is, you know, that our choice of our partner is the most important statement about our choice of values that we just talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing how to, and then there's, you know, 10 other wisdoms that you really have to work on to make them better. So I'll give you one more example. That this wisdom number one is the secret to feeling loved is feeling understood.
Oh, yeah.
No one says, I want a divorce. My partner understands me.
No. You're right. It's usually just the opposite. Oh, they don't get me.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
And then another one is playing together, because data shows that couples that play together are more likely to stay together.
Okay.
And so teaching couples how to play. And you know, my wife and I both are very hard workers, and so we have to take out time to, you know, turn on some high-energy music and dance together or do other things that are more playful.
Good for you. Okay. Number seven?
Number seven is creating win-win solutions to your stickiest problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I referred a little bit to that a few minutes ago, where we sit down and write out the things that are our single biggest concern, our single biggest problem that we can't solve by hearing each other. So if you want one wants to go on a vacation to Cancun and the other one doesn't want to go on a vacation at all, or, you know, wants to go to Washington, D.C., how to work that out. Or on a deeper level, you know, one wants children, another doesn't want children.
Mm.
How do you work that out?
Yeah.
And so I have the whole system that...
Shouldn't a lot of this stuff be talked about before you have that relationship?
Well, you know, in Role Mate to Soulmate book, I have about 400 different issues that typically come up in a marriage or a relationship. And, you know, people just don't talk about 400 different issues.
It's not that many. But, I mean, some basic. Like you mentioned having children.
Having children or not having children, yes.
That's a biggie.
That should be.
You know.
And yet, let's say somebody goes to have children and they realize they can't. So then do you want to adopt children?
Or don't want to have children.
Yes, or don't want to have children at all. And if somebody doesn't want to have children at all, okay. You know, how do you work that out versus somebody that, well, sweetie, let's just adopt a child, or, you know, but maybe they can join Big Brothers and Big Sisters. Maybe there could be some type of, temporary, you take on a child for 6 months or a year, or the fires in Los Angeles allow you to take in a family for a while and fulfill some of those things in that way. But the process of creating win-win solutions allows a lot of brainstorming and then allowing the couple to get together to choose which what little piece of this and what little piece of that could be pieced together to get a good compromise.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So when you start this, does it take a long time to get through all this?
The answer is yes, and the answer is worse than that. I'm probably the only author you'll ever talk with that will say reading the book really isn't enough. And so I was able to persuade my publisher to let me include for almost free an online video course that can that the couple can take by going to the QR code and Roommate to Soulmate, and then getting that course. So it's an 11-hour course that they can go through. That's very much like the course that developed this. And because I found that even though it does help people a lot to read the book, it doesn't give them nearly as much opportunity to shift their brain to new ways of being natural by actually doing the exercises with each other rather than just reading about the exercises.
Sure. No, that makes good sense. Okay, so you have a website, I take it then, right?
I do. It's okay. WarrenFarrell.com. Like the Farrell is F-A-R-R-E-L-L. It's not like Will Farrell with an E.
Yeah.
I'm not nearly as funny as he is.
You're a lot more stable for families, though, to be able to survive.
I hope I have something to offer you.
You bet. So it's Warren, W-A-R-R-E-N, Farrell, F-A-R-R-E-L-L.com, right?
Perfect.
Okay.
Yes.
And I assume the book is available every place, Roommate to Soulmate?
The book is available everywhere, and right now Amazon has it on a 30% sale.
Oh,
and so it's nice. You know, very. But you know, if you have the money, your local bookstore is really a good opportunity as well.
Terrific! And again, the online course, they can get that or find out more about it on your website.
Yes, both on the website, but the best way to find out about it is in the book. There's just a QR code to get the course.
Oh, okay.
And so you can. And I really encourage you to not just get the Roommate to Soulmate book, but actually practice it with your partner. Really, all of these things work really well, but they do take practice.
Sure. Well, you know, and the way the world is today, to be honest with you, Dr. Farrell, let's face it, it's a crazy world we're living in. There's hate, there's polarization, there's politics that, and it's just... I don't know how we survive from day to day. I really don't.
In the book, there is a section called From Civil War to Civil Dialogue. So in our family, we have one Trump supporter and two people that ran for political office as a Democrat.
Good luck.
You can imagine. what it explains in the Civil War to Civil Dialogue is how to have somebody that you love or even a colleague at work how to work out with them that you will only hear their perspectives because you love them or you care for them or you just want to be there for them if it's a colleague, and how you go about doing that and how you find out the virtue behind what you disagree with.
Yeah.
There's almost nothing politically that we disagree with that didn't start out from the person that you're talking with having some positive intent. And if you let that person know his or her positive intent, at least they feel that you're seeing them not as the enemy, but as somebody whose heart is in the right place, even though you may feel that that virtue got taken to its extreme and it became a vice.
Wonderful. So again, no, it's not drwarrenfarrell.com, just warrenfarrell.com?
Just warrenfarrell.com.
Okay. And the book, of course, is Roommate to Soulmate. And sounds like what you're talking about, we should be listening to all the other stuff anyway, the other side, before we make a decision. And people are not doing that anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah. No, everybody thinks we should all hear each other, and then nobody actually does it.
Thank you. You watch one television network, and you watch the other network, and you go, are we living in the same country?
It's
so different. Anyway, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. And again, all the help we can possibly get. So hang in there with me because after I'm going to take a break here. But I do want to talk with you off the air, okay?
Yes. Okay, I will do that. Thank you.
Terrific. And, of course, again, thank you folks for being with me in this hour. As always, we want to find good things, bad things, and make our own decisions. And don't be led by anyone. Make the decision because you believe it, not because someone tells you to believe it. In the meantime, live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and above all else, dare to dream. Remember, how do you make a dream come true unless you have the dream to begin with? Well, that's what we try to do on Pop Talk. We go in search of truth.